following program is brought to you by friends and partners of End Time Headlines.
All right, what's up, guys? It is Monday, July 31st. It is the last day of July of 2023. We want to welcome you to tonight's broadcast. This is End Time Headlines. I am your host, Ricky Scapparo, the founder and the voice of End Time Headlines. Listen, if you're new to the broadcast, it's your first time joining us and be a part of this program, let us know in the comment section below that you are new. And let us know where you guys are joining us from. We'd love to hear from you. So we've got a lot to talk about tonight. And in regards to plagues and pestilences, I don't want you to be ignorant on and unaware of what's going on. So there's some things that we need to be paying attention to. There's a lot of warnings, in case you don't know. That's why we put these programs together for the common people that just don't have time to research these things and keep up with these things. That's what we do as a watchman, our ministry. We do this. We gather different articles and research and information. We put this together and we do these segments to inform you of the times and seasons in which we're in. So there's a lot of warnings coming out from the World Health Organization and the CDC especially. And there's a lot of things dealing with these weird plagues and pestilences. So let's get after it tonight. Did you know that a secret Chinese lab in California was just busted stockpiling nightmarish biological plagues? We're going to give you I'm going to show you a video clip on this, but let me give you a little bit of a backdrop for this. It appears that an illegal, unlicensed laboratory full of lab mice, medical waste, and hazardous materials that was owned by a shadowy Chinese company was doing things that is called bizarre, unusual, and even frightening. When authorities entered the facility, they discovered thousands of vials that contain all sort of various infectious agents. In addition to malaria, they found chlamydia, E. coli, streptococcus pneumonia, hepatitis B and C, herpes 1 in 5, rubella, and this secret laboratory. In addition, it was also discovered that there was 900 mice that were genetically engineered to catch and carry the, and I'm going to use a term that Bishop Larry Ragland coined, the want-want virus. So what in the world's going on here?
I've been in government for 25 years. I've never seen anything like this.
First at 11, this one is tough to believe. An investigation tonight into a possible illegal medical lab. It was operating at an abandoned warehouse in Reedley. Inside, mice bioengineered to incubate the COVID-19 virus. The lab was discovered near I and 9th Streets. 30 refrigerators and freezers, some broken, were found filled with bodily fluids. Health officials tell us they are shocked at the biological house of horror. CBS 47's Juanita Adame live in studio with the shocking details tonight.
Well, Brian, this story is so complicated. There are local, state, and federal agencies all involved. Now, what prompted this investigation was a simple garden hose that was illegally attached and coming out of the back of a building.
It was back in April, inside this abandoned warehouse in Reedley, that a discovery so shocking was made that it left local health officials stunned.
This is a truly unusual situation. I've been in government for 25 years. I've never seen anything like this.
Listen to the responses, the remarks, the comments from these people.
Never have seen this in my 26-year career with the county of Fresno.
What was supposed to be an empty building used only for storage was home to an unauthorized lab testing facility, something no one had even conceived of.
We reach out to our local public health directors throughout the state, California, and there's really nobody has really expressed this type of interaction with a unlicensed lab. So it is something new.
The discovery was made after a local code enforcement officer noticed this garden hose poking out a back wall of the building.
Frankly, we knew that shouldn't be there. And when she went to go investigate, she found that there was activity or operation or something happening within that building.
The city then obtained several search warrants to enter the building. Once inside, no staff was located, but
there was a special room that was built housing about 1,000 mice, 1,000 white lab mice.
And the reason the mice were in the lab was jaw-dropping.
Through their statements that they were doing some testing on laboratory mice there that would help them support developing the COVID test kits that they had on site.
Documents show
what?
So the lab was also being used to produce pregnancy tests. 200 of the nearly 1,000 mice were already dead. According to court documents, all the rodents were being caged in, quote, inhumane conditions. Also found thousands of vials, many of which contained biohazards, materials including human blood, unidentified tissue, and other unknown substances.
A lot of these are...
Guys, there's so many questions here. Human blood? Whose blood is it? Who did this? Who obtained this? How did they obtain it? How long have they had it? How long has this been going on? What is the nefarious reason for it? This is a huge story, guys.
Being classified under unknown chemicals, labels had been removed from bottles, so there was only certain testing we could do to those chemicals.
According to court documents, experts determined that at least 20 potentially infectious, viral, bacterial, and parasitic agents were being stored inadequately.
20 agents. And then we sit around and we wonder, hey, where did this stuff come from? How did this come over here? Hello? And by the way, we're just getting started today.
Including E. coli, malaria, and even COVID. The city of Reedley immediately called in the CDC, the FBI, the California Department of Public Health, and the Fresno County Department of Public Health.
I think because of that swift action that was taken, we really have been able to maintain public safety this entire time.
Over the course of several weeks, investigators figured out just what they were up against. And as of now,
there are no more biologicals, there are no more mice, but they still will see us abating. There's 30 freezers and fridges, there's medical equipment, there's all sorts of furniture in there. And so they'll still see some activity. Nothing hazardous at this point.
Prado said the owners operated under the name Prestige Biotech, and so far they aren't saying much.
Some of our other federal and state partners.
They're not saying much. That doesn't raise a red flag at all, does it?
Still have active investigations going, so I really can speak more to the building side of it.
Now, again, Reedley city officials emphasized that the lab had no city approval to operate and was supposed to be vacant. Investigators are working to figure out what to do next.
So, again, we have to ask this question, guys. Why are we not hearing this on every major national news outlet? Where's CNN? Where's MSNBC? Where's Fox News? Where's NBC, ABC, CBS, News Nation? Even those, where are they at? All right, according to Zero Hedge, again, the investigation found that the tenant was Prestige Biotech, which is a company registered in Nevada and unlicensed for business in California. City officials spoke with, and I'm not going to try to pronounce this, so you guys are listening by Apple and by Spotify. We're just going to give him the abbreviation of XY. They spoke with XY, that's going to be his initials, who was identified as the company president through emails included in the court documents. Yao, which I believe that's how you pronounce his last name, told officials that Prestige Biotech moved assets belonging to a defunct company, Universal Meditech Incorporated. They moved it to the Reedley warehouse in Fresno after UMI went under. Prestige Biotech was a creditor to UMI and identified as its successor, according to court documents. Officials were unable to get any California-based addresses for either company except for the previous Fresno location from which UMI had been evicted. Now, listen to this next part. Quote, the other addresses provided for identified authorized agents were either empty offices or addresses in China that could not be verified. This is according to court documents. One individual by the name of Kyle Bass texts in a brief thread, quote, is this illegal lab the tip of the iceberg? How many additional bioagent labs will be found? ? So how crazy is this? This right here in California, this would be the biggest story of the hour right now. Meanwhile, the CDC is just rolling out the warnings. I mean, it's like a Rolodex. They're just rolling them out. This first story is the CDC warning about red meat allergies that are being caused by tick bites, which this is nothing new, but I want to read this here. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention warns that alpha-gal syndrome, or AGS, a tick-borne illness that causes a allergy to red meat consumption is, and I quote, is an emerging public health concern. There have been more than 90,000 suspected cases documented between the years of 2017 and last year. Yet nearly half of clinicians have never heard of the condition. Some of you hasn't even heard of it. Some of y'all think it's fake or it's outlandish. But there are some people that comment in the comment section that have experienced this. Listen, if you're watching this, you're listening to this, and you're able to comment below on YouTube, Facebook, Rumble, whatever, and you've been bit by a tick, and you can confirm that you have this disease, that you have developed this allergy to red meat, hit us up in the comments. We'd love to hear from you. Because many providers are not aware of AGS, which also requires a diagnostic test, the agency estimates that as many as 450,000 people may have already been affected since the year 2010. Scientists, according to this report, scientists first connected the dots between red meat allergies and tick bites more than a decade ago when the identified patients who got allergic reactions such as hives or anaphylaxis after eating beef or pork, most had been bitten by Lone Star ticks. So that seems to be the culprit. So here's some more on that.
Control is warning about a potentially life-threatening red meat allergy caused by tick bites. The report estimates 450,000 people may have contracted the disease known as alpha-gal syndrome. CBS's Meg Oliver reports the alert comes as health officials report cases of tick-borne diseases are rising.
Last year, 53-year-old Carmen Stangota began suffering from fatigue, muscle spasms, and slurred speech.
8 months of testing, six different doctors from primary neurologists, ear, nose, and throat, endocrinologist.
The father of four from New Jersey was finally diagnosed with Lyme disease from a tick bite that didn't show the most common symptom, a bullseye-like rash.
You know, there's good hours and bad hours. It impacts all the things you take for granted that you do every day.
Other symptoms include headaches, fatigue, and muscle aches.
Every summer, we see an increase in tick-borne diseases.
Dr. Lori Handy says the number of ticks and tick-borne infections nationwide is on the rise, likely due to climate change.
Ticks can survive in different areas because it's warmer, and that then can lead to more infections in humans.
To prevent an infection,
in case you didn't know, everything's related to climate change. Just saying.
Doctors recommend wearing long clothes and using bug spray with DEET, changing and showering once home, checking your body in a full-length mirror, and throwing your clothes in the dryer.
Turn it on high, and if any ticks remain on the clothes, they'll just kill that after about 10 minutes.
Then we have this crazy story out of Texas. The image that you're looking at on your screen is not psoriasis. It's not a rash. It's not poison ivy or poison oak. It's actually leprosy. A man from Texas almost died from a skin rash that ended up turning out to be a rare medieval disease. According to the report from Mirror, a man from Texas went to see a dermatologist about a mysterious rash that he had picked up, and doctors were flabbergasted when they examined him, as most doctors never get to diagnose this medieval disease. A year later, and he's still on antibiotics. Let's dig a little bit deeper into this report. In the case of this man, whose name has not been released due to HIPAA compliance laws, his brush with leprosy left him recurring surgery to repair his tendons and extreme physical therapy to help him return movement to his hand, and is still on antibiotics 12 months later. According to the medical report, the man was heavily tattooed and immigrated from Samoa, where the disease is a little more common. It spreads through prolonged skin-to-skin contact or contamination while tattooing. The CDC went on to say it is also spread through droplets from the nose and mouth, but prolonged months-long contact with someone who has the disease is necessary to contract it. Patients stop being contagious after they start treatment. But here's the crazy part. The Texas man apparently had the disease for 4 years but symptoms can take a long time to develop. So this guy had leprosy. Think about this. This man had leprosy. It was walking around in contact with people for 4 years and didn't even know he had it. The report said that initial tests confused doctors as they didn't show anything, but the man had multiple rashes on his entire body and face, and his hand had stiffened into a claw-like shape by the time that he sought medical help. 4 years. They finally sent skin samples to a specialized laboratory that was able to confirm the presence of leprosy. It is otherwise known as Hansen's disease in the modern medical world. And of course, Dr. Aiden Filey, however you pronounce it, of Texas A&M University said that, quote, early diagnosis and treatment are important to decrease disability and adverse psychological effects of leprosy and to reduce the risk of transmission. He went 4 years with it. The report says that it remains unreported whether the man infected anyone. In other words, you're not going to know about it, and it's never going to see light of day. This means close friends, relatives, people he was in contact with. But of course, transmission rates are now much lower than they used to be. In other words, don't worry. There's nothing to see here, folks. Nothing to worry about. Then we have the CDC with another warning. This time, it's about a deadly fungus that has been discovered in Florida. Here we go again, Florida. Florida's getting hit with everything, right? They have malaria, these other mosquito-borne illnesses. Now, Florida, along with 28 other states in America, is showing the presence of what is now being called by the CDC, pay attention to this, guys. All this is leading somewhere today. A, quote, serious global health threat.
All right. The CDC is warning about a deadly fungus that is spreading across the United States. It's affecting healthcare facilities for the most part, such as hospitals and nursing homes. The fungus, which is called Candida auris or C. auris, is drug resistant. If infected, it can cause severe illness for those with weakened immune systems, and it can even be deadly. Here to discuss drug-resistant bacteria and superbugs more broadly is Captain Arjun Srinivasan. He's the Deputy Director for Program Improvements for the CDC's Division of Healthcare Quality Promotion. Doctor, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning.
So I guess the first question is, how concerned should Americans be about antibiotic-resistant infections?
You know, I always tell people this is something that it's a cause for concern, but not panic. This is an important problem, right? We know that every year in the United States, about 3 million people will get an infection.
It's a cause for concern, but not panic. Yet, the CDC is calling it a serious global health threat. It's just interesting to me. Anyway, let's go on.
With a bacteria or a fungus like Candida auris that you were just talking about that is resistant to the main antibiotic or antifungal that we would like to use to treat it. And that's how we simply define antibiotic resistance. So it's common. About 35,000 people per year will die of those infections. So this is a very, very important problem. It's a concerning problem that impacts the lives of millions of Americans. Odds are you or someone you know has had experience with one of these drug-resistant infections.
Give us a really basic science lesson here. What makes a superbug resistant to antibiotics?
Yeah, you know, antibiotics are like any other, bacteria and fungi are like any other living thing, right? They have a desire to survive. And the way that they do that is they develop mutations. So when we expose them to an antibiotic or an antifungal that's designed to kill them, over time, some little population through random mutations will become resistant to that agent. And what happens is that, you know, bacteria have strength in numbers, right? There are billions and billions of them. So the chance that one of them is going to develop resistance to one of our antibiotics becomes higher and higher. And the more we use those antibiotics, the more we expose bacteria and fungi to these agents, the higher the chance that resistance will develop.
Imagine a child dying from a simple scrape that becomes infected. Sound far-fetched? This spring, a Pennsylvania woman nearly died from a urinary tract infection, something 8 million Americans get every year. But hers was caused by a new, dreaded, drug-resistant bacteria.
Antibiotic resistance is one of the most serious health threats we face today. We risk entering a post-antibiotic era where even simple infections can be deadly.
All right, the World Health Organization is warning that dengue fever cases could reach, quote, near record highs this year. According to this report, again, the World Health Organization is warning that cases of dengue fever could reach close to record highs this year, partly due to, here it is, ready? Try to take a guess of what is the cause. Ready? Global warming. I mean, what are we not going to blame global warming on? What are we not going to blame climate change on? It's literally, it is the cause of everything going on in the world now. Everything's being tied to global warming and climate change. Here's another story. The CDC is preparing for a winter with a trifecta of diseases. Ready? The wah-wah, the flu, and RSV, the trifecta that the CDC is warning us about.
Most of us may be focusing on summer fun right now. Health officials are already working on a plan to prevent a repeat of last winter's triple-demic of respiratory illnesses.
They got a plan, guys.
Vaccines, and this year the CDC is recommending three of them, one for COVID, the flu, and a new one for RSV.
I know you're shocked at the recommendations by the CDC.
This comes after last winter saw some 58,000 deaths from the flu during the peak season, while roughly 50,000 died from COVID between November 22 and March 2023, and 10,000 from RSV, which also saw more than double the number of hospitalizations. Health officials say the three shots will greatly help lower those numbers, but there are some concerns.
Let's bring in Dr. William Schaffner. He is a professor of infectious diseases at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. Dr. Schaffner, welcome. So how did these respiratory illnesses become so virulent last year?
Oh, please tell us.
What happened probably is that before then, we were all locked down, wearing masks, children staying home from school, and we reversed all that, right? Mm. We were protected from the viruses by all those lockdowns, and then we opened things up, took off our masks, sent the kids back to school, and the viruses had an opportunity to spread. And they did last year. Mm. They started early, they started vigorously, and there were three of those viruses active, those respiratory viruses, at the same time. Flu, COVID, and this other virus that people are just hearing about, RSV.
Dr. Schaffner, when we talk about these three, can you take all three vaccines at once, flu, COVID, and RSV?
Michael, I don't think too many people will want to do that. I will tell you that flu and COVID are well studied. They work.
Well studied? Really? Yeah, they're well. Never mind. I'm going to get myself in trouble. Let's just go on.
Well, together, RSV and flu, it resulted in a somewhat diminished response on the flu side. So I think RSV probably ought to be taken alone, separate from the other two.
Well, we know, Doctor, that generally the vaccines are especially important for seniors and people with underlying health conditions. Are there some groups that should not get the shots, or at least not all three of them?
Go ahead and interject your comments right there.
Well, so far, RSV is recommended with discussion with your doctor for people age 60 and older. So we can put RSV aside for that group. Other than that, I think COVID and influenza vaccine will be both widely recommended. We know influenza's vaccine is already recommended for everyone 6 months of age and older.
And six.
Wow. And the recommendations for the new COVID booster that we anticipate this fall, they'll be coming soon, and they'll probably also be rather widely recommended.
Now, you may be watching this and say, well, Brother Ricky, where are you going with this? What does this even mean? Guys, listen. Did you know that there is leaders, world leaders, pushing and advocating for digital libraries for to track those that have been inoculated? We got to be careful here. I'm trying to use wisdom. For example, let me show you this article. Did you know that Tony Blair, I'm going to read this to you. It's going to, when I'm going to read this and kind of reword this. You guys that are watching, you could see this on your screen. Tony Blair calls for digital libraries to track those that have gotten, that have had the prick. Quote, you need the data. You need to know. We need to know who has gotten it. Tony Blair, according to this report, is calling for these digital libraries that that can record the status of those around the world that have gotten the prick. Why? Ready? For future pandemics. Remember that word, that phrase, future pandemics. In a World Economic Forum discussion, I know you are absolutely shocked as I am that that would come up in a discussion with the World Economic Forum. But nevertheless, in a discussion on containing the next major viral disease outbreak, the former prime minister said all countries need proper digital infrastructures to identify those who have received the prick. Blair went on to say that, quote, in the end, you need the data and you need to know who's been pricked and who hasn't been. Do we really? Who needs to know this? Why do they need to know this? Quote, some of the pricks that will come down the line, there will be multiple shots. So for these pricks, you've got to have, for reasons to do with healthcare more generally, but certainly for pandemics, a proper digital infrastructure, and most countries don't have it. So he's right there. They're pushing for these digital libraries to contain the information on every single person on the planet that has been inoculated. Blair went on to say that digitization in healthcare is one of the, quote, great game changers. And that, quote, we should be helping countries to develop a national digital infrastructure. Oh, Mr. Blair, that's exactly what they're working on. This isn't the first time Tony Blair has long called for the deployment of tech to record prick statuses worldwide. In a 2021 article on how to inoculate the whole world, Blair said systematization of all the information involved in the prick rollout will provide vital data and allow governments to focus accurately on the deployment of these pricks and track progress. Again, nothing new. We knew this was in the works. Here's more on that.
Businesses and schools are now trying to figure out what it will take to safely resume in-person operations.
As Max Massey shows us, some of the country's biggest tech firms and healthcare organizations are working together to help facilitate safe in-person activities.
The group, called the Vaccine Credential Initiative, wants to ensure that everyone has access to a secure digital record of their vaccination, like a digital vaccine passport, something that can be stored in people's smartphones. The record could be used for everything from
It won't be stored just in a smartphone. How about some type of a device like a chip that can be injected or implanted? In case you don't know what we're talking about, go watch last week's podcast. In at least two programs, we talked about this. This is what's coming down the pike.
Air travel to even entering concert venues. The coalition comprises a broad range of healthcare and tech leaders, including Microsoft, Salesforce, Oracle, Cerner, Cygnus, Evernorth, healthcare software firm Epic, and the Mayo Clinic, among many others. Although it's early in the vaccination process, potential use cases are such a technology are already cropping up. Some companies plan to pay their workers to actually get vaccinated. Some experts expect that states and countries currently requiring negative COVID-19 test results for incoming travelers could eventually also accept these vaccination passports. Now, the Vaccine Credential Initiative wants to create an open source standard model for how hospitals, pharmacies, and clinics administer vaccines and how they make those digital records of the immunizations, which can be provided to patients who want them. Immunizations are typically tracked by writing them down on a piece of paper, a card for people to store with their important records, and are also kept track of in a patient's electronic medical records. For one thing, coronavirus vaccination records will be more easily accessible and easily transported if people have
Here we go again. What did we talk about? Security and convenience. This is what's going to sell all this stuff.
Access to them for schools, offices, event venues, making a digital record even more practical. The COVID-19 vaccination record also needs to be verifiable and secure in a way that was less important.
I'm sorry, did he say secure? I think he did.
Important for past vaccination records. Otherwise, a person could try to fake having gotten a COVID-19 vaccine by using someone else's record. The tech companies play a big role. Firms like Microsoft and Oracle, they manage the tech infrastructure for a lot of large healthcare systems, and they can...
And y'all know who the founder of Microsoft is, don't you?
Build in the standards for a vaccine credentialing system, making sure accurate vaccine data pops up right to your smartphone. Guys?
Gee, isn't that wonderful? Now, we're going to close with this. The elites have told us and warned us that it's not a matter of if, but when the next global emergency arises. And they're already making provision for that. We shared this report. I'm going to kind of reiterate this. We shared this report on a previous podcast, but this was from the Federalist. The United Nations is planning to seize global emergency powers with the support of Biden. When you go in and you start digging into this report, you'll discover that many of the details of the UN emergency platform were laid out in a March 2023 policy paper titled Strengthening the International Response to Complex Global Shocks, an Emergency Platform. In this paper, the UN Secretary General writes, quote, I propose that the General Assembly provide the Secretary General and the UN system with a standing authority to convene and operationalize automatically in an emergency platform in the event, listen, of a future complex global shock of sufficient scale, severity, and reach. Once this is triggered, the emergency platform would give the UN the ability to, quote, actively promote and drive an international response that places the principles of equity and solidarity at the center of its work. The UN would bring together the stakeholders of the world, including academics, governments, private sector actors, and, quote, international financial institutions to ensure there is a unified global response to the crisis. The emergency platform would also give the UN the power to ensure that all participating actors make commitments that can contribute meaningfully to the response and that they are held to account for delivery on those commitments. In other words, the United Nations would be given unprecedented authority over the public and private sectors of huge swaths of the world, all in the name of battling yet an unknown crisis. So what kind of global shock would trigger this emergency platform? We're going to watch some videos together. We're going to hear some, from some other experts on this. What is a global shock? What could this mean? The UN provides several possible examples in its formal proposal of what a, quote, global shock could look like, including a major climatic event, future pandemic risk, a global digital connectivity disruption. Interesting. Major event in outer space and unforeseen risk. And by the way, all of this is backed by Biden, his administration, and the White House.
The World Health Organization is moving forward to revise international health regulations in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Some member states are expressing concern over provisions of the zero-draft WHO convention agreement. Critics say the proposed agreement would give the WHO authority over health care, trade, and other aspects of our lives. Well, joining us to explain more is Reggie Littlejohn. Ms. Littlejohn is president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers and co-chair of the Stop Vaccine Passport Task Force. Hi, Reggie. Before we discuss how this ties into U.S. law, what would approval of this zero draft agreement mean for people worldwide?
Well, I believe that it will mean the establishment of a worldwide totalitarian biotech state. So,
whoa, let's hear that again.
Worldwide totalitarian biotech state. So these instruments, and by the way, you correctly characterized the zero draft as an agreement. That's what they're calling it. They don't want to call it a treaty because they are deliberately trying to subvert the United States and the other countries' treaty processes. So if it's an agreement, all it takes is a signature. It does not take going through our Senate. So people say, oh, don't worry about it. It will never pass our Senate. Well, they are deliberately subverting our Senate process.
Listen to that.
Signatories must recognize, quote, the central role of the WHO as a directing and coordinating authority on international health work. What do you believe that means?
Well, it means that the WHO is able to call the shots if there's any health emergency or potential health emergency.
Let that soak in. This is terrifying, guys. This is something, again, that's why we labeled this. Are you paying attention to what they are warning us about? Are we paying attention to the warnings they're given?
Anywhere in the world, and the language that says that they have to have the permission of the country is stricken so that they can do it without the permission of the country.
Wow.
And it's not only about human health. They have something called One Health, which means that they can do it on behalf of human health, animal health, plant health, the environment. They can use any reason that they want to be able to come in and basically run the show in terms of addressing that health issue.
And I've read the zero draft proposal. It gives the WHO authority over the global supply chain.
Listen, did you hear that? There's so many things in this, guys, that are just shocking.
Trade, commerce, through establishment of the WHO Global Pandemic Supply Chain and Logistics Network. WHO Director General Tedros would lead that effort early on in the pandemic. You remember Tedros praised President Xi Jinping for China's efforts to control the outbreak. So your thoughts on him?
Think about that. The World Health Organization is pointing at this man and China as a great example of how to handle this. Do you realize what they did back when this thing was going on? The inhumane things that did. We're talking about welding doors shut where people couldn't get out. We're talking about the authorities going in the streets and just ripping families apart, ripping them from their children, ripping them from their parents. Really? And this is the leading example of the world that we should be following? Wow, guys, unbelievable.
And his potential control of the supply chain.
Well, Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus is very closely aligned with the Chinese Communist Party. And the Chinese Communist Party has absolutely outsized influence at the World Health Organization, which is why they were able to get away with all the lies that they did, which were just amplified by Dr. Tedros. So this is not a good alliance at all. And in terms of the supply chains, they are also wanting to take control over the intellectual property. Like if somebody in the United States or another country develops a great vaccine, they're going to be forced to share that information, which I think is bad for the production of pharmaceuticals. I think that intellectual property rights are very important.
Yes, I noticed that in the draft agreement. And here in the U.S., let's move forward. How is the Biden administration planning to use the National Defense Authorization Act,
yes, let's hear
the NDAA, to pre-approve whatever is approved by the WHO?
This is something that just came to my attention on Friday from an international law expert, that this National Defense Authorization Act, which was rammed through at the very end of the last Congress, contains within it something called the International Pandemic Preparedness Act. And I think most people in Congress don't even know about this. But that act contains a loophole in it, which he argues, and I agree, makes it that whatever the World Health Organization passes is automatically made law in the United States, again, subverting our Senate. So this needs to be opposed. And in fact, I think that the entire World Health Organization attempt to take over the world, really, through vaccine passports, that's another thing that they want to do. The World Health Organization, if these things are passed, will have the ability to mandate in the United States how we handle a pandemic, including forced quarantines, forced mask mandates, forced vaccine mandates. Why should we allow Dr. Tedros, who failed so miserably in handling the Wuhan virus?
Guys, we got to stop for a second. If you thought the last pandemic was terrifying, think about the next one. Look at the infrastructure that's already been put in place to prepare us for the next event. Again, I want to say that again. If you think the last pandemic was terrifying, we haven't seen nothing yet. Because if you're paying attention to what this woman is telling you, then we're going to see blue helmets here in the States. That everything will be controlled by these organizations or this organization. And again, go and do your research. I've got to use wisdom here again. Go do your research. Look and see who all's hands are in the pot. Who's in conjunction with one another? Who's on board with one another? She already revealed one of them. Who's in direct connection with China? This is just unbelievable.
Order us around about how we handle our own health. So I think that we should actually withdraw from the WHO, and we are calling for there's a bill that is sponsored by Representative Biggs, and there is also a debate right now about raising the debt ceiling. I think that anyone who believes in freedom in the U.S. Congress should condition raising the debt ceiling.
All right, guys, here's another. I want to show you this little clip here. This is a former U.S. official as well. Want to listen to her comments here on this. This is all, again, she's given her insight into this, quote, global pandemic treaty.
Then they would be empowered to tell us in America, we have to lock down. We have to shut down. We have to close our churches. We have to close our schools. We're forced, mandated to take a vaccine, whether we want to or not. We're forced to mask. We're forced to whatever it is that they tell us that we have to do. We have never before in history, in 5,000 years of recorded human history, we've never seen this level of authority given to an international global body.
Those supporting this authority for the WHO, such as top advisor Dr. Abdullah Asiri, say it's necessary to protect the world's population, even if it means restricting some of their liberties.
The world, however, requires a different level of legal mandates, such as the pandemic treaty, to navigate through a particular pandemic, should one occur, and it will. Prioritizing actions that may restrict individual liberties, mandating and sharing of information, knowledge and resources, and pandemic control efforts are all necessary during a pandemic.
Let us seize this opportunity to foster international collaboration, ensure global health security, and protect the lives and the well-being of all people beyond boundaries.
No opposition from nations' top leaders in handing over this power starting next year.
No opposition. Wow.
Don't think all the nations fully understand what these implications are. So we have very little time.
And top backers of this United Nations move do say speed is of the essence.
And I wish to stress from our perspective.
Of course they do.
The quicker we can come together, the sooner we will all be safe. We know that the challenges we face won't be solved by a few leaders or a few countries, but by the world coming together and fighting for what's right.
Some in Congress oppose this move to further empower the WHO, They've proposed legislation that would deem it a treaty. A treaty would require Senate approval. Bachman, however, claims the White House is trying an end run around these lawmakers.
The Biden administration doesn't plan to bring this treaty back to the U.S. Senate because they're using a subterfuge. They're calling it not a treaty. They're calling it an accord. And they're saying, this isn't a treaty. This is just an accord. We can do this. We don't need the involvement of the U.S. government. But once you give government and power away, it's very hard to get it back.
The former Congress.
I mean, there's really not much left to say there, guys. Again, I know this is very sobering, but are you paying attention to what they are warning us of? What is coming down the pike? Not if, but when. When the next global shock event emerges. So listen, intimeheadlines.org, intimeheadlines.com. That's going to be our main website right there above. If you're watching by YouTube, by Facebook, by Rumble, you can see it right above me. That's going to be our main website where you can bookmark our site. If you've not downloaded our free app, I want to encourage you to do that. You can download it on Apple. You can get it on Google, on Play Store, on the Google Play Store, again, Apple or the Google Play Store. Type in Intime Headlines. Get your app today. Hit yes to push notifications. You're going to be notified of every headline, every podcast, everything that we put out there. It's going to come right at your fingertips. And as always, guys, we appreciate your support. We appreciate your partnership. If you'd like to become a partner of our ministry, if you are blessed by our ministry, the information we give, the revelation, the equipping. Guys, we do have some equipping messages coming up. I know we've been just... we have been hammering out a lot of information, but we need to get this word out. We have to warn the body of Christ. That's what we do as watchmen. So I know you guys know that, but again, we try to equip, we try to edify, we try to encourage, and we try to inform. That's what our ministry does. And if you stand behind our vision, you support us, we want to give you that opportunity to do that. You can do that two different ways. You can give electronically through the app out there at the bottom, or you can give by check or money order right there on your screen at End Time Headlines, P.O. Box 1391. That's Monroe, Georgia, 30655. So as always, guys, thank you for your generous support and of this ministry, your time that you take to come on here and listen to what we have to say. Listen, do me a favor, hit that like button, hit that share button, hit that push bell notification so you can push this out. You can get the word out. We get into the algorithm, let other people see our content. Again, this is how you do that. So listen, we're going to sign off for tonight. We'll be right back here tomorrow on the 1st of August on Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern for another great program. Until then, may the Lord bless you, may he keep you, and may his countenance shine upon you. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Thank you for listening to the End Time Headlines podcast. We pray that you've been blessed and equipped by today's message. For more information about how you can help partner with our ministry, please visit endtimeheadlines.org.